every night. When that moon is big and bright, it's a supernatural delight. Everybody's dancing in the moonlight.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook and welcome Dr. Kathy Kozak joining us for a couple of weeks. Yeah.
You got it. A nice way to sort of incorporate some new elements to what I do every day, because there's a lot going on out there, government-wise, politically.
That's
a lot to talk about.
That's where we're starting out. We've all been raised with the idea that ours is a representative government formed for better or worse by the decisions we make at the ballot box, the root premise being that voters are reasonably rational and well-informed. It's a comforting notion, but as recent events have made us wonder, is it accurate? Contributing editor Neil Milner has been reading a new study that suggests that the fundamental theories of democratic government have a powerful antagonist, human behavior. Neil's with us this morning. Good morning, Neil.
Hi. Hi, Chris.
You know, craziness in American elections dates to, what, 10 minutes after the nation was formed, right? It's not anything that new, but is the climate changing?
Well, the climate is not changing so much as people are starting to realize, scholars are starting to realize that the climate was never the way the folk theory of democracy thought it was going to be. First of all, when we say crazy here, we're not referring to crazy as in those crazy Trump voters who have these weird ideas. In a recent book by Christopher Aiken and Larry Bartels, who's about the preeminent voting behavior study called Democracy for Realists, Why Elections Do Not Produce Responsive Government, they really showed that voters behave in ways. Now, we're not talking just about certain voters. Voters, as a rule, behave in ways that are totally different than the theories of democracy say they should be. If you think about what they call the folk theory of democracy, which we all kind of grew up learning to accept, is that the voter is a information-seeking, a kind of objective information-seeking person. A person is supposed to be relatively engaged in politics. He or she makes the decision on the basis of looking at what the policies are for government, for the political parties, the candidates that are running, and then make a decision. It turns out, and we've known most of this for long periods of time, most people are not politically engaged. We don't make our decisions on the basis of that kind of objective analysis. When we do, we're myopic in ways that that suggest that we don't make decisions on the basis of policy. We make the decisions on the basis of certain reference groups that we're a part of, and that we really don't know what's going on very much. The important thing to know about this is that this is not about people making themselves better if they only were more educated and so on. In fact, it's really about the intractable nature of changing this, because this is how people behave. People behave, when it comes to politics, the same way they behave about anything else in regard to how they go about making decisions. And people are not engaged in politics, not because they're ignorant or because they're morally bereft, but because it's kind of the psychological characteristics.
It's how we're wired. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're wired that way, at least a lot of us. And so what Aiken and Bartels say is that you start with that fundamental contradiction, right, that people don't behave that way. Now, remember what we're talking about here. We're not talking about certain kind of crazy people. We're not talking just about Trump people. We're talking about average people.
Talking about ourselves.
Talking about ourselves. And, in fact, they say that educated people do more of this than the average person does, because educated people tend to be able to rationalize their political decisions in terms of a kind of ideology, even though they are not making their decisions in any way different than anybody else. So you're kind of left with this contradiction between what we assume about how you make people better in regard to engagement in politics and what the data says. And that's where they kind of leave it. They try to do a little bit more about what would be the next steps. But the fundamental thing to understand is how different we are from this prevailing theory of democracy. And they think you can't just stop there, that people have to stop thinking about the voter and democracy according to this folk theory that we all learned about the rational voter, and think of another way of doing it.
Well, the so-called founding fathers anticipated this, right? They didn't want this process, the representative process, to become irrational. So they, you know, it was males, it was land, you know, they wanted people like themselves, men like themselves.
Not to mention they wanted white men with property.
White men like themselves. Yeah, property white men like themselves, which is hardly representative democracy. But the thinking was basically, let's confine this to the, quote, responsible citizens.
Right. Now, Aiken and Bartels are not trying to do that at all. They say some things that support the need to understand what the Founding Fathers were doing and some things that are very different. The things they say to support it is they say, look, the Founding Fathers did understand the limits to a kind of popular sovereignty viewing thing, that it wasn't just about political mandates on the basis of the majority. Over time, our prevailing notions of democracy have emphasized this popular sovereignty. And that's where you start getting these contradictions between those ideas of popular sovereignty and the way people can actually behave. They differ from these Founding Fathers. These two guys are not conservatives by saying, look, we're a strong defenders of democracy. You have to build it on a more honest base, and that involves in some ways more giving people with less political power, more political power, more through making them accessible to groups. That's mm-hmm. their kind of that's where they try to build on this.
But it leaves a lot of questions unanswered, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To put it mildly.
Well, they're the first to admit it. I mean, when I get to this last couple of chapters there and they go through this review of what is different about the voter compared to that, it's right on. And then they say, we can't do much yet about, you know, this would be a whole other kind of book, which is an academic's way of saying we can't figure this out yet.
They
suggest two things. They suggest, first of all, we have to understand that people do not make political decisions as autonomous individuals. We're social people. We're tied into groups, whether the groups are ethnic groups or the strongest, most stable group of all, which is political party and how we identify with it. And you watch how people start sorting in terms of Republican versus Democrat when the presidential candidates are clear. And so we have to recognize that groupiness, and we have to build in the possibilities, economic possibilities and political possibilities that make groupiness more legitimate and more accessible to people. That one of the ways to get rid of isolation is to do that.
Well, meanwhile, he who understands the basic irrationality of the voter tends to win elections. I mean, we've seen in this last election cycle, it's ongoing, we're almost in the truth doesn't matter phase.
Well, the truth, I mean, what they're really suggesting is that as Stephen Colbert says, it really is much more about truthiness, that there are some people who do out-and-out lies. There's some candidates who do more exaggeration. But this process of communicating ideas from the candidate to the individual, truth or falsehood is just one way of thinking at it. I mean,
I'm thinking of Rumsfeld's The Known Known, The Unknown
Well,
Known.
That's right.
He sounded like Jean-Paul Sartre in Secretary of Defense, right?
I just as soon not learn my existentialism through Donald Rumsfeld. But there is something there. I think people really have to think about this process of communication much more the way we think about how we absorb religious ideas, which is not really so much by being very careful studies of theology. That is most, I'm talking about a person who observes a certain religion. There's some theology, a whole lot of social groupiness, this kind of communication process that rational doesn't do it, irrational doesn't quite do it. Human maybe is a better word.
Well, let's hope it resolves at some point. Thanks very much, Neil.
Sure.
Political analyst Neil Milner is a contributing editor of our biweekly segment, The Long View, and he'll be back in a couple of weeks.